Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Mount Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus, and today I visit one of my mages, sages, healer, and seer, Serpentis Satori. Greetings, welcome, Satori.
Hello.
How are you today?
I've had a very interesting week, but I'm sure you did too.
Yes, I did, but interesting to a magician can often be pretty interesting.
Yeah, you always love that when you hear that from a sorcerer or a witch about, it's been interesting.
Yes.
Like, are you okay? Are you okay?
So you
How
see,
much
you,
bleach did you buy? How much bleach?
You seem to have come out of it okay, so that's the important thing.
One of the things I learned back in Cleveland from one of my favorite exes is magic is too dangerous to take seriously, because if we die, we just go back to heaven anyway.
That is something that a lot of people don't get. It's something we've dealt with a bunch of times through various perspectives. But some of us aren't going anywhere. We come from somewhere. And that makes a world of difference in what this world becomes all about.
Yeah, like our misunderstanding about Friday is that Hecate needed to absorb me for a little while to understand everything I understood.
So you're getting mind probed then.
No, but if I'm a demigod, I'm a piece of her. So she just takes her piece back. The math is very simple. I just reverse the equation and take my piece back.
And that works for you?
I understood that when I was a teenager, because she did something like that. When I was afraid of dying when I was a teenager, Hecate's like, there's no afraid of dying, dissolution is all. If you die, you just go back where you came from.
And that's been my impression dealing with the invisible, you know, my entire life in my own way, that, you know, basically it's how the elemental's relationship to devas was described in the early theosophical literature, but not just for nature spirits, kind of like for everybody, or at least everybody who's connected to their source.
And if you're connected to your source, you just go back.
Right.
They just rewind. So there's nothing terrible about that. You're just no longer a miniature. You're back to the source. And that's fine.
And that becomes part of the paradoxical, that becomes one of the paradoxical things that you have to deal with, in that you are already part of the source. You can't not be part of the source, and yet you're here and pretending not to be, or getting stuck in not being.
Well, not from the super above. The ultra. We are supposed to be talking about how we make a ritual.
Right.
Let's bake a cake. Let's bake a cake.
Awesome.
Because I agree with the Louisiana ideal of spell books or cookbooks.
Right.
That
I can see
someone that. Someone just taught you to make French onion soup differently than they taught me.
And you will follow the recipe you learned until it's time for you to find your own ingredients and create your version of the soup.
Yeah, but all of my students have to compose their own work, because I had to compose my own work. And Circe had... The 80s Circe also had to compose her own work. So the people I grew up with didn't have, like, scripted Wheel of the Year holidays. We had to compose our own work. And if you have to compose your own work, whenever you do a spell, eventually you learn to understand why you're composing.
Right.
You understand that even though I wanted to be an actor, I became a wizard because that was the only way to work things out. But my experience in theater allows me to be like, no, it's just doing a very, very small play. It's very, very small. We don't have a lot of budget, and we don't have a lot of costumes, but it's a play. Just think about it that way.
That's a good way to think about it, and I have often thought about it that way. My stuff is mostly improv, I guess you call it. I just run with it, and I'm not.
We mostly do improv, but there's a certain point where that's a disadvantage when you're trying to have more than three people involved.
Right, I can see that.
That when you are trying to involve people of different practice, people in different parts of the world, or people who are just. There's a point where you need to have a script, and it needs to be a small play. And you're doing like a two-play, like, I can argue even the LBRP is a very, very small play, because when I got into an argument after my 9 equals 2, that was the argument I had, but I was on the receiving end, and I lost. Because even though the LBRP starts out as a very, very, very old children's bedtime prayer, it becomes a Kate Bush song and one of the most important rituals in ritual magic. And I got into the argument about what kind of theater is it, and I lost. And then I'm sent to New Orleans, where everything is a party, and all of the magics is all mixed together. But when it's important when you are dealing with making people from, when you're trying to deal with more than three people to have a script, because you are doing a play, even if you're just doing it for Archangel Michael or Hercules or whomever, you're still doing a play. You're still doing performance art.
Okay, I get that, and I respect it, because I'm mostly alone in my workings. But now
you just think you're alone. You just think you're alone until we get more other people doing the same songs and dances.
Now, as you know,
my teacher had a similar attitude as you, because he was a Jungian, and he sort of thought of ritual as the songs and the dances. And then I'm his student, and I'm a Shakespearean actor. And then I disagree with him about everything, because I'm like, but in theater. But that's blocking. But that's dress rehearsal. But in theater. And he's like, so all ritual is theater? I'm like, Crowley outright says that. Crowley says that in Magic and Theory and Practice in the beginning. The theater of ritual that is magic. That's like the second chapter of Crowley. Right?
Right.
So one of the problems that I'm here to debunk is the idea that Wiccans believe in something called ceremonial magic. And problem is, ritual is everything. Mr. Rogers changing his clothes is a ritual. Right? Going to the land of make-believe is a ritual, right?
Yes.
So everything we do when we are doing the thing is ritual. And the idea of ceremonial magic is bunk, because you're trying to rewind Hermeticism back to pre-Agrippa, or maybe even Agrippa. But even so, that's Agrippa. That's not current times. You're taking me back 1,000 years to tell me I'm wrong with things that are 1,000 years old. Because
but in Wicca, during its formation, there was input
but
from...
But Aleister Crowley is part of that, and those are all...
Right.
Everybody who's part of Wicca is a Golden Dawn initiate. They all know better. They all are Golden Dawn 5, 6, or above. They all know better. They all have read the lectures that are available in the Llewellyn version of Regardi. They all know better. They're just lying to the students.
Why would they do that?
And the same reason they lie about white magic. Why would they do that too? That's a good question. But disinformation is disinformation, and they knew better because they were all Golden Dawn initiates. They all took their Golden Dawn oaths, and they all knew better. Why they did it is on their souls, is on them. But going forward, we need to understand they are all Golden Dawn initiates who knew better because they all have everything in the Llewellyn Regardi book. They all know everything in, they all know everything Westcott and Mathers wrote. So why are you lying? That's always been one of my big questions. If you know better, why are you lying?
They might not be lying in the sense that they're trying to deceive. It may be that they choose to call their new configuration of what they're doing by its own name.
That's possible, too. But also keep in mind, Glenda the Good Witch, as someone who works in the Emerald City, is a complete fabrication of theosophy, because if white witchcraft were a thing, there would have been a white witch who, like, was Dux Ex Machina in Macbeth, right? Because there are the evil witches. Obviously, the white witch would, like, come save Macbeth. Come at the end and help out the kids against Macbeth, right? But white witchcraft is a complete fabrication, too, of the 30s, because there's no evidence of any of that before then.
But it might be something new, Satori. Our understanding of things changes in part through the society that we are born into. So things that are good in one era and in one place might be bad in another era and another place.
Yeah, but that's a concept in voodoo and in Irish magic called the other guy. That if you do a job spell, you gain inspiration, you gain advantage, you get to roll the d20 again. What happened to the guy who would have gotten that job had you not used magic? What about him?
Well, magic.
So even white
magic exists on different levels. You could say that having people skills is magic of a very powerful sort because it's so extensive. No, the person might also have skill in writing resumes or cover letters, or he might be able to ace interviews. And even if he's not practicing magic as it's traditionally understood, he might have read Rhonda Byrne's book on The Secret and applied some of the principles there. And so, in a sense,
that's the Jim Morrison definition. That's going to Jim Morrison and Mojo. Going to Jim Morrison and Mojo, because Jim Morrison uses the word Mojo correctly, but he uses it in the vague way you are. But the issue then becomes when we start, but see, the whole point of those labels is to discriminate. No point in ritual and magic when you say you're white, you're black, you're a necromancer. Do you know what I do? Do you know what necromancy is?
In Greek, it means oracle of the dead.
Right, but understand that black magic equals necromancy is used discriminatory, and this is a current issue right now with the young people. Because those of us that deal with the dead are necromancers again. It doesn't matter what trade that is. Because you are again playing in the realm where white is white and black is black, and there's no nuance. And magic is all about nuance and intention.
Working with the dead is one of the most prevalent forms of spirit communication. And although some people view necromancy as evil, it doesn't necessarily have to be. And healers were often poisoners throughout history as well. So being a healer doesn't win you any points in some higher realms. Even though you're practicing magic. Magic, from what I understand, it depends on your intent. And even though part
right.
of it,
it's all about intention, and it's very dangerous to just label someone as good or evil.
I agree.
I
have affinity with Hades, with Cerberus especially, when my three greatest fears show up. That announces the presence of Cerberus. Hades is always very eloquent, and his utterances cannot be disputed, yet they're oddly comforting when he speaks in absolutes. I don't see the gods of the underworld as evil. They're the gods of the underworld.
And as a child of Hecate, I understand in a very different way than everyone else does,
mm-hmm.
like my sisters do, about you just don't like this. It doesn't mean I'm evil. You just don't like it.
Right.
You just don't like caramel. What's wrong with caramel? Isn't evil. What's wrong with caramel?
I have not heard that one yet. So.
Well, no, when I was having this conversation with Cersei, I explained it to her that way because the previous Cersei explained magic as s'mores to me a long time ago, and that stuck with me because that the s'mores is magic thing, if you're not black and not white, you understand that the chocolate and the marshmallows both died for you.
Right. That's the mystery,
right.
The mystery of the wine.
If you're not black and not white, you're okay with that. So onwards and forwards to our ritual.
Now, as you know, I'm forming, right now it's a loose structure, but I intend to structure it or solidify it or make it more solid as we move forward in time. And I'm calling it the Lions of Olympus. And this is basically a embodiment and expression of what we would call leonine qualities. I'm integrating the totemic lions, lions from occult symbolism, lions from modern cosmic spirituality with the UFOs. It's basically the lion totem or the lion archetype, as some prefer, some hate that term. But anyway, just basically the spiritual lion and its qualities. And at this particular point in time, I'm getting the mythology out there, the stories, and starting to put up activities and so on and so forth. And you gave me some very good advice. I started playing with it. I'm not finished with what you gave me, and I sent you what the, my latest version or my.
You're never finished. Like me in the breaking ritual, I'm never finished. I'll revise that right before I kick off.
That's what I'll probably be doing too. And I also elicited the help of Kamwast to help me out, and he's offered to help out also. So this way I have two great magicians working with me on this, so I'm sure it'll come out fine.
So as we were discussing the other night, I told you the way a ritual is built is you do a bit of free association when you're not quite awake, not quite asleep, not quite yourself. When you're a little bit loose, because when you're a wizard, being a little bit loose is the most important thing. Which is the difference between a sorcerer and a priest, is we wizards need to be loose. Because we're like, oh no, it's all improv. We're just doing improv. Even my magic is improv. I'm just lucky when I get to have tools. So I told you to free associate, and we narrowed it down to Lion, Sun, King, Visionary, Leader. I liked Paragon.
Uh-huh.
And I like Protect and Defend, but that's also because I think your guys are going to be Paladins. So.
Yeah, I took the Paragon and the Exemplar, and I just took out the words and expressed the sentiment with, I ceaselessly strive to embody and express the Olympian ideal, which inspires and motivates me. So that could be both applied to protectors and to paragons, or exemplars and paragons.
And see, that's how these things work. That's how you compose these sort of rituals, because you are trying to, because on some level of visualization takes three times as much bandwidth. Because to do a visualization, you have to describe every single book and every single hallway, and you're building a D&D dungeon when, as a ritual, you can just say, like, I call thee.
Okay.
I call thee Lord of the Storms. I call thee Mother of Dragons. I call thee. Whereas if you do it as a visualization, you're like, and you see a hurricane, and the bad moon rising.
Those are very effective, though. If you do it right, the vision or the shared experience goes beyond the words you're speaking. People start to pick up on other things that continue from one visualization to another, so that after everybody's...
It's the same thing with a ritual. It's the same thing with a ritual, because when you... when you're doing a ritual that's more than a week long, you start to deal with, like, I'm having the same synchronicities you're having.
Right.
How can that be? Because I call thee the bad moon rising. I call thee the hurricanes on the way. I'm not making fun. That was my song when I was 12. People still think about me in that song.
That's a good thing.
No, Bad Moon Rising is not a good thing. It's about the end of the world.
Oh, okay. I'm not familiar.
It's about the end of the world while you're sitting at the pier in New Orleans. That's not a good thing.
Is it a song or?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, I'm not familiar with it.
Creedence Clearwater, because I've had to deal with it. Whenever I am trapped in this, I'm like, I see the bad moon rising. I see the hurricanes on the way. And I'm like, well, you could, like, think of the bad moon rising and, like, Warhammer 40K. You could see the hurricanes on the way and think about Katrina and, like, all the bad hurricanes. But he doesn't need to say that. He just says, I see the hurricanes on the way.
Right. Understood.
Because that's fine, I guess. I guess that's fine.
Well, if you're quoting a reference that people would understand, you could put tons of shades of meaning and levels of meaning in a bunch
well,
of words.
Well, but that's part of the ritual, too, is like I explained to you that sometimes back in the day, we would spend a month arguing about ritual music. We would only clarify the text, and then there's the argument about, like, is it this or is it that or is it that? Because that's part of the ritual, too. Because the ritual music gets in your unconscious. And if I'm doing a ritual for justice and I'm calling on the bad moon rising, I'm doing something very different than if I'm calling on With or Without You or a U2 song.
I'm not a music.
I just as easily could do that and script that, and everyone having to follow my script would have to follow my script, and they would just have to understand why it's that song, and they would eventually, especially if we're doing it every day for a month. But that's also why these things aren't usually done by committee, because normally the spirit is speaking through one person and making them say, like, no, come at the dark moon, and you're going to use Bad Moon Rising anyway as your music. So just go with it. It's fine.
I have no problem with that. thing that I'm looking for is, as we discussed, I'm not seeking to do this by myself. If I was just doing this by myself, I'd have no problem with any of this, because I do things by myself generally. But this is something that I'm involving other people with, and some of these people have mythical, mystical, or magical backgrounds. So I want there to be some familiarity.
But the point of the ritual is the same thing as a cat. You went to a religious school when you were in, like, middle school, right?
Grammar school and middle school, yes, until high school. There wasn't really
a middle school
back then. It was just grammar school.
Okay, well, I always thought it was middle school. So you had to do, like, mass every day, right?
Yes.
So this is the same thing to a different thing. We aren't saying, oh Lord Jesus, I give myself to thee, blah blah blah. We're saying, Hercules empower me so I may go forward, blah blah blah. Because it's easier to do that as a ritual, because you can do that in half the time as a visualization.
How about combining both? Because I usually, in the things I do for myself,
That's different. The ritual is useful because you can do a ritual at a coffee shop. I sometimes had to do my borderless one at a coffee shop because I had to get my tea and do all of those words just with my thumbs on my tea to do it enough times a day, according to Crowley. They're separate, and it's important to keep them separate because not everyone can do everything. And as you're trying to pull people together of different practices, a common ritual becomes common, like mass. It's not that visualization isn't important. It's just that some people can do that at lower levels. Hello?
I'm here.
It's just that it's easier to say, light a candle for Hercules, say these words at dawn, and you've done it.
So that's very similar to the practice of the iconostasi, which is a Greek, I guess you'd call it a household altar, although it does have many mythical figures and historical figures, it's mostly religious figures from Christianity. And if you want to talk to somebody, you kind of take the representation, be it an icon or a statuette or a figurine or a symbol, and then you light a candle to it and you address, you basically, it's like calling on a payphone. You take out the candle, you light
right.
it, and then you talk.
And you say, hey, Hercules, help me lift heavy shit today. Let me get through today.
Okay, I understand now. Thank you.
Because that's the whole... Because that's the whole point of prayer, isn't it? That's part of why, like... I had formal prayers for Hecate, but she destroyed them when I was in college. Because Hecate's like, no, I just turn on the news hour. Just trouble me, because I care what you humans are troubled about. Just trouble me. That's fine. And that came across very clearly Friday, because she and I had a very long conversation. But the point of ritual is that not everyone can, it's easier just to light the candle and say, like, oh, Hercules, make me strong, than anything else. And it's always been that way.
So that I can understand. I approach it from a different perspective, but I understand yours. It makes a lot of sense.
I'm that ambidextrous Scorpio opinion of like, but it's that way. What? But it's that way. But it was that way in Rome. So you're trying to change the Roman way? What's wrong with you? It's interesting you're trying to change the Roman way. Why? What do you know? What? But that's the whole thing about prayer versus, I understand you prefer not to do things with tools and ritual because you prefer visualization. But as we become a larger organization, people want to do the communal ritual, our mass, like you did when you were in religious school.
Okay.
Yeah. And there's a reason they make you do that. Because God knows I've dealt with enough Catholic girls who have gone rebellious and become witches. I have heard the flip side of this argument 1,000 times. But there's a point to the communal ritual. There's a point to we are all helping the sunrise together. There's a point to we are all fighting Apophis. We are all against the darkness. There's a point to that. And it's important. especially with this year coming.
What's going on this year coming?
You can all smell it. I'm not gonna say it and make it true.
Okay.
The base in the Matrix. It's the base in the Matrix. I'm afraid to talk about it too much because I'm afraid I will.
Okay.
It's the base in the Matrix problem.
Understood. I know some of the challenges we're facing socially. They're extreme challenges, and this is a very key time in the unfolding of events.
But the point of building a ritual is it's much easier for us to say the prayer and light the candle for Hercules and just let that happen than because then it infuses us. It's if you're new, it infuses you.
Okay, I understand now. I have
because
words
the,
during my visualizations. I do visual. I meditate twice a day, and I do visualizations, affirmations, and that type of stuff as part of my meditation. The words, as you said before, they change as I find better words to express what I want to say. But that becomes very repetitious because the words get said at some point and they stay that way for a while. And then I don't need to do a lot of the accompanying visualizations that I've done initially to weave the words together. I can just enter into the astral space.
You don't need the visualization. You could just use the words.
Right.
And turn it into a ritual and just make it the ritual because you don't need the visualization because you're just saying words. And how is that different from like any morning prayer to any saint?
I've always used the words to remind me of things. And in the sequence of the sequence of the words to like prioritize what I'm saying, but they're always
right.
Action type of things. Like I am a lion of Olympus. I dare to dream the bold dream, to claim it mine and make it real. And I actually penned these for another organization that I founded maybe 30 years ago. Athena and I crossed paths back then as well while I was doing that. And that initiative lasted for a number of years and involved many people. So that's a powerful sentence. I decided to recycle it.
Well, you can't throw out the bad things.
I can do what? I'm sorry.
Part of serving Hermes is we keep what's really good from wherever we took it from.
Right, that's a very Hermes thing. That's a very Greek and Roman thing.
That's a very Hermes thing. Yeah. Hermes is like, I'm only stealing your good stuff. Don't worry about it. I'm quitting now. I'm quitting. I quit today.
Well, it's true. In the ancient world, cultural appropriation was something you're proud of. You know, it's like we do this so well that these guys adopted it or did a version of it. Or
well, you and I just got into the thing about lions, and I was trying to explain to you like Africans don't worship lions. Egyptians
no.
do.
Right.
Egyptians worship lions. Africans don't, and that's kind of weird. But that is true.
But there were lion cults among even modern Africans during the days of colonialism.
There are some questions about their origins. But the African religion people say there aren't really evidence of lion worship. And the thing I sent you yesterday again proved like the Greek lion worship's kind of weird. there's this cave, and we're not sure what this cave does, and it's kind of creepy.
Well, in shamanism with the big cats, even in South America, part of the initiation is you are eaten by the cat, and you become the cat. Or the cat becomes you, or you both become each other.
Yeah, well, yeah. That's a power-sharing thing.
But part of it is being eaten by the lion. In the Herculean tradition, the lion was, he went from defeating the lion of Catharion, which led to the Thespius and his daughter's adventure, which led to him almost being worshipped as a hero or as a god while he was still alive. And he had that crossroads experience, which was described, I forget who described it first, but between Aletheia and Hakia, or virtue and vice as it's sometimes called, but it's not really virtue and vice, where he makes a choice, and he picks the more difficult choice, the one that will get him to Olympus eventually and have him live on in story forever, which is a type of immortality to ancients. And so it's definitely a choice. But I spent part of my life exploring, what if you make the other choice and take the dark path? And it's still a heroic
path. Conan the Barbarian.
That's the Conan the Barbarian, the Barbarian path. And that, too, is
Conan the Barbarian. I understand you're the Conan the Barbarian thing some guy posted on YouTube the other week.
Okay.
You'll enjoy it. Only you and I will enjoy it.
So whatever decision you make, and I factored that into all my subsequent lion spirituality things, that, you know, even though this is the way the Greeks chose and the way that even Hercules closed, you're still a lion, regardless of which path you take. And Conan's name among the southern tribes, which are now in Africa, according to Robert E. Howard, was Amro, which is the word for the lion. So he has a lion totem also, and that figures pretty prominently.
Well, there's a thing in House of the Dragon, and there's a thing in Westeros about, like, with all Targaryens, you flip a coin. They're either good or they're bad.
Right.
If you're a dragon, you're either good or you're bad. Period.
And that's the Hercules mythology. The point is that the human experience is hard, so cut people slack. And you could be the son of the mightiest deity in your pantheon and still, like, fuck up major time. But then again, even though you messed up major time, you can still accomplish great things. So don't become inactive because you're not perfect. So I feel that's a very healthy message and well worth remembering as you wend your way through life, you know.
Well, that's a very healthy message for the younger people about, like, no one's perfect. We're half mortal. Rorden explains that as we're half mortal because there's a conversation between the Grey siblings about that in the middle of the Grace book. Talia and Jason have a weird conversation about, like, their mother. And I'm not great and you're not great either, but we're going to be okay.
And which series of books is this in again?
The sequel to Percy Jackson, Lost Hero. Oh,
okay.
It's like in the middle. Because there's a long conversation between Talia and Jason in the middle of the middle. Where they're not angry, but I'm not sure how the rest of you read that. Because they're not angry with each other. They're like, you made your choice, I made mine. And Talia's like, well, you better save the world then. Well, if that's what you're doing, brother, you better get on your get back on the Golden Dragon.
There were two new Percy
Jackson
books, by the way.
Get on it. What?
Aside from the 15 that were already written, two new Percy Jackson books have come out in the past year or so.
I haven't read those.
You read them?
I'm actually sort of slowly wading through Spiderwick because
okay.
it's Christian Slater and because I love those books and because I believe in fairies.
As do I. They've been a very big part of my life. I don't talk about it very much because if I explained all the peripheral things I've experienced or done, it would just dilute what I'm trying to do and say now.
But I believe in fairies. My ex-girlfriends all believe in fairies. So we're working our way through Spiderwick, and we're glad we actually got it on Roku.
Is it a series now? Because I remember when it was a series
yeah,
of books.
Yeah, it's on Roku. Yeah, you have to have a Roku thing.
Account.
You have to have a Roku.
And they made
Roku TV or a Roku box.
They made a movie or movies about it 2 years ago before they made a series.
They made a movie about it 10 years ago that's really bad.
Okay.
It's really bad. I own it, but it's bad.
I've seen it like 10 years ago, and I have a few of the early books somewhere. Sometimes, like for instance, now the enrichment programs that I do, the interactive storytelling, the kids are into Breath of Flames or Wings of Fire. Wings of Fire. So I started reading Wings of Fire. Just so I understand what...
Olivia wants me to read those, too.
Yeah, I got the first book and the first graphic novel, and then I got a book that explains all the different types of dragons. So I asked several of the groups, did they want to have, in addition to the Greek mythology that we're doing, which is influenced by... Dungeons and Dragons and other role-playing games and their monster manuals to some degree, if they wanted to have...
Y'all need to watch the Lego D&D thing. The Lego D&D thing has Jenny D, and it's so much fun.
Is it?
So much fun. It's so much fun. It's 3 hours. If you're going to watch a movie for 3 hours, watching them play D&D is so funny, and... Even if we all can't afford the $400 Lego D&D thing, it's so fun. They're all having so much fun playing.
I will keep my eyes open for it, and if I encounter it, I will watch it. You've always been a good recommender of movies in all the decades that I've known you and we've had these conversations.
Well, Donnie Darko is free on YouTube. The Shadow is free on YouTube.
The Shadow is in Who Knows What Evil Lurks in the Hearts of Men? That Shadow?
That Shadow, yeah. Because I had to talk to Cersei about, but how can I? How can you? But it's in the movie. That blonde girl can read his mind somehow. It's fine.
Yeah, I still love the Shadow. I used to have an extensive Shadow collection of the radio shows and the movies. I had, I think, copies of all the movies that were on VHS or DVD, and I had a lot of the books. Those things have gone from my journey, but I remember enjoying them for a long time. And my eldest son, when he was a kid, he used to love when I'd go, What Evil Lurks in the Hearts of Men, and then do the laughter. He used to laugh and laugh and laugh.
Well, because when I was talking to Cersei about that, I'm like, no, you need to watch The Shadow before we can have our next conversation. And after she saw it, she's like, oh, you already know. Like, yeah, help me, I'm drowning. Get here. It's okay. You can read my mind. Get here. Get here.
He was a proto-ninja before we knew about ninjas. He was like,
He's proto-Batman. He's Batman before Batman.
Yeah, he is. In the
And he's Orson Welles. And he is also Orson Welles.
In the role-playing games I did back then with superheroes, the Shadow was the mentor of the Batman in the role-playing games, because that the coincidences between them were too vast to be mere coincidence.
And that's again one of those things about, like, the prayer. Only the Shadow knows. Because there are things only the Shadow knows. And that's part of all of his mythology. Until he becomes... Until we try to get rid of him in the 50s. Because he's inconvenient in the 50s, I guess.
But he survived. He survived, and there were even new movies made of the Shadow, and there were several revivals in comic books. And then again, he went into obscurity where he is now. But several times, I remember the Shadow of a Sin came to prominence. The Phantom hasn't, which is interesting. He was very prominent.
I like the Phantom, like the animated Phantom, in like. 2000?
The Defenders of the
it's
Earth?
It's like 2000. Well, no, there was like a very early morning cartoon about the Phantom.
Yeah, I think it was part of the series, and then they all joined together and became Defenders of the Earth, and one version of Hercules was there too, plus a lot of cartoons that nobody talked about anymore.
That thing.
Flash Gordon is part of it, and
Flash Gordon and the Phantom and her. And then the weird version of Hercules.
With the Liberace cape and the long blonde hair.
Yeah, that's that weird Hercules.
Yeah, I recently shared a little bit about that Hercules in one of my introductions, you know, because I remember that there was actually two series and they were going to make a live action with that Hercules, because they did with Isis. She was in the cartoon, and she was also live series.
Yeah, yeah.
So they were going to do the team that he was on. He was on two teams, Freedom Force and Space Sentinels. So they were going to make Space Sentinels into like a live action, like they did Wonder Woman. They did a test or a pilot. I saw bits and pieces of it, but it never went anywhere. So it was something else that would have, could have, but didn't happen.
That's one of those things.
Now, we have around 5 more minutes. For people wanting, like myself, trying to, you know, work with other people now and things that they've done alone, I guess you call me a semi-solitary. I do things with people in some things, and I do things by myself.
I'm solitary right now. I even though I've lived in Chicago for 13 years, I don't have a Kate group, and I don't even have a D&D group. I'm solitary because of the way the world is now.
I have, at this point, a group that meets in my house once a month, and these are all metaphysicians like you that I've encountered over the years and done stuff with. So now we're kind of like a bunch of older metaphysicians getting together to do more stuff. We're currently looking at Merkabas and the Hekhalot literature and recontextualizing it so that it's more Hellenic, or its approach from the Hellenic perspective.
Yeah, I've been more focused on the youth, because I made an oath a few years ago that sent me into YouTube. And in a lot of ways, as much as I resented having to take that oath when I first took it, it has been one of the best decisions I've ever made, like going to New Orleans. it was not really what I wanted to do when I did it. And I do not mean that in any offense to any of my girls. I just want them to understand I wanted to take the low road, not the high road. And even though I took the high road, we now have to decide where we are going as non-Christians in the Western world. Because the Christians are coming for us. And we need to think about that. Because the Speaker of the House is a Christian. This is all Handmaid's Tale. We need to be careful. And we all need to pull together. If we're not Christian, because if they win in November, and they're not going to, but they're not going to win. They are at the end of their 2,000 years because they are at the end of the age of Pisces. They're at the end of the age of Horus. We have come to the new age, and they are becoming beef jerky. Look at Marjorie Taylor Greene. Look, evidence. The most important thing we can do is pull together. We need to get over our differences and understand truth while we can.
And that is what I've worked on in very many different ways, some small, some larger. And my focus on theosophy and my use of theosophy is because in theosophy, the world and our experience in are like a schoolroom. And all of the world, we're running out of time, all the world's holy figures, as it were, are working together to help evolve man from the nightmare he's created and is stuck in. And unfortunately, we're down to our last minute. Any things you'd like to leave with people to consider, and should they still contact you through me?
Yes.
Okay. And you have a minute to leave us with final thoughts, if you wish. Okay, that was today's edition of the Satori Chronicles, or the Satori Dialogues, and I'm Hercules Invictus. I wish you all well.